Good afternoon. This is the Senate Labor and Commerce meeting. It's Thursday, April 10th, 2014. With us, we have Senator Olson, Senator Stedman, Senator Machicki, and myself, Senator Dunleavy. We do have a quorum. Plan today is to hear two previously heard bills, several House bills extending boards, and a House bill pertaining to accountancy. So bills today, we're going to have SB 193, Contractors Bonds Licensing, SB 189, Exemption Licensing of Contractors, HB 241, Extend Board of Marital and Family Therapy, HB 239, Extend Board of Examiners and Optometry, HB 240, Extend Board of Chiropractic Examiners, HB 242, Extend PT and Occupational Therapy Board, and HB 302, Public Accountants. We're going to begin with SB 193. The contractor.
Sorry, 189.
Excuse me. We're going to begin with SB 189. This is licensing of contractors. Is there a CS?
There is, Mr. Chairman. I have a motion.
Senator Machicki.
I move CS for Senate Bill 189, version O, as our working document.
Any objection for purposes? Objection for purposes of discussion. So we have SB 189, CS. Sponsored by Labor and Commerce, and presenting the bill will be Steve Ritchie, staff to Senator Dunleavy. Mr. Ritchie, can you identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Ritchie. I'm staff to Senator Dunleavy in the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. With your permission, Mr. Chair, I'll walk through the changes that were made in the CS, which is version O.
Yes, please.
On page 3, lines 1 through 3, I'll start on line 1. We added language that follows construction is, reading the following, in a home rule, first class or second class borough or unified municipality. On line 3, we deleted language after construction is complete and inserted is completed for its intended purpose. And I'll just walk through and explain exactly what that does. Essentially, the changes we are making to Exemption 12 of the exemption from who is a contractor, essentially the owner-builder part, we are confining the changes to those that live within a borough, so in a home rule, first class or second class borough or unified municipality. The other change, instead of saying after construction is complete, since Alaskans typically or commonly may leave some aspect of construction until they move out or never fully see a building project through, as long as it's completed for its intended purpose. The idea is if someone has Tyvek wrap on their house and not siding, that takes away any sort of ambiguity or question as to whether or not the construction was complete. If someone is occupying a home and that's what the purpose was for, then it's very clear. So this language takes away any sort of doubt. And I can certainly, to refresh committee members on what the intended purpose of the bill is, if members would like that, or I can take questions, whatever you'd prefer.
You want to just do a brief overview, please? Yeah, I remove my objection from the adoption of the CS.
Okay. Senate Bill 89 makes changes to the exemptions from contractors and who has to become a licensed contractor. As you'll see on page 2, we're specifically looking at exemption number 12, which is the home builder. Currently in statute, an owner may contract, perform work independently, subcontract, purchase materials, basically oversee the construction of one home, duplex, triplex, fourplex, or commercial building every 2 years. So one home every 2 years. That's current statute. We further refine it by adding the exemption only allows someone to sell their home once every 2 years unless they go to the Department of Labor and basically show that that was not their intended purpose when construction began. So if there's a bankruptcy and illness or for whatever reason someone had to move out of state for a job, that they're still able to do that. But we're trying to capture those that are building for the purposes of income.
Questions for members of the committee? Senator Olson.
Mr. Ritchie, I just want to make sure that I'm fully aware. What about the unorganized boroughs? You talk about the first class and second class boroughs. What about the unorganized boroughs?
There will be no changes made to those that live in the unorganized borough. So current statute will certainly apply to them as written, but no changes will be made to those that live in unorganized boroughs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so we have a number of folks online to testify, and we're going to start with Al Nagel out of Anchorage, Department of Labor. Are you there, Mr. Nagel?
I am here, Mr. Chairman.
Are you here? Are you testifying just for questions, or do you have comments?
I am simply here for questions for the committee.
Okay, thank you. We have Ed Sniffen, Anchorage Department of Law. Are you online, Ed?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and well, I am here for questions only. Thank you.
Okay, and so we have two folks up in Delta Junction. We have James Squires and Pamela Good. James, are you online?
Yes, we are.
Okay, James, could you just identify yourself, where you're from, and then please begin your testimony?
Yes, this is James Squires from Delta Junction, and I would like to, there's a few concerns I would like to bring up here. I'm testifying as a private citizen and landowner. Many of us have just received this new version in the last few minutes. We received this about 35 minutes ago. It's very difficult to spend an appropriate amount of time to review, and certainly I understand this was just scheduled today. And there are probably many people that would like to testify here today that have not had an opportunity to one, know that you're having a hearing today, and two, prepare an appropriate response to what's going on here. I understand that originally postcards went out to people that were contractors in the state, yet owner-builders, you know, were not noticed. So even though you guys might be on the back end of this, you know, the people of the state are just now finding out about it. So my first request would be for some more time to get more people involved, to understand what's going on here and to figure out how it's affecting them. What many of us are concerned about are unintended consequences. And right now, I've heard what you guys said about the change that you make, but as I look at it here, on what's on my screen, number 12, I understand that to be an exemption. That number 12 is an exemption, the homeowner exemption per se. And now, and we brought in this two-year factor, but now the exemption in this paragraph does not apply if the structure under construction is in a home rule first class or second class borough. So the way I read that, and maybe I'm wrong, I'm not a lawyer, but the way I read that, it seems to be the flip, like this is actually being applied to the unorganized borough and not being applied to the borough. So maybe with a little bit more time, we could try to understand that, but I'm reading it backwards from the way you guys are saying it. Another point I'd like to bring out that I don't think has been brought out before is that the owner-builder, he's putting his own capital into this structure, which is a totally different relationship than a contractor who's out there using somebody else's capital. The owner-builder is doing more than just building the place. He's at risk for whether he can sell that place for more or for less than the amount of capital that he's put into that structure. So I think there's an inherent difference between the two. And the contractors, even though they might feel like they're being held to some, you know, higher standard, their money's not at risk, like the guy's building his own structure. I feel like this should be handled, this whole business should be handled at the borough or borough assembly level. I mean, look at the 10th Amendment of the Constitution. That's supposed to push things down to the state. And then if there's a problem in some borough where people feel like they had this loophole taking place, that should be handled at that borough level and not at the state level, where it's all too easy to have unintended consequences as you cast a loop around the whole state, you know, and bring in, you know, the greatest and largest state in the union. There's a few constitutional elements like I would like to discuss here. Last of Constitution, Article 1, Section 1, inherent rights has to do with the enjoyment of the rewards of their own industry.
James?
So if they're building their own home, yet they have to communicate with the...
James? James, excuse me just for a moment. I'm sorry. We're going to have a few other people that are going to testify, but if you could, we usually limit to 3 minutes, and I apologize, but if you could wrap up your thought, that would be appreciated, and then we can move on to Pamela Good.
Okay, I understand. What we have here is a situation where it seems like you're putting the burden on the individual. I heard the word capture in there, like we're trying to capture some people. That's not a word that resonates well with the Liberty folks in this state. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you, James. Pamela, are you there?
I am.
Could you please identify yourself and where you're at and begin your testimony, please? And we're going to try and keep it around 3 minutes because we do have a few other folks that want to testify. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. This is Pamela Good. I'm a private citizen, and I do live in an unorganized borough, and I do support what James Squire said earlier about this coming out in the 11th hour. We got about 30 minutes ago, and I did check the basis legislative website, and it's not even there for those who are on top of this, of course, if they're not in the tracking system. So just for that alone, I think it should be postponed for the hearing, but I'll continue. I did read the sponsorship statement, and I was a little offended at some of the words that were used, like loopholes, protections for consumers. Since when does the state have to protect the consumers? I think the federal department came up with a whole new department for protecting the consumers, which to me is a usurpation of power. But so that alone tells me that there are some issues with it. In summary, it sounds like there's some contractors that aren't very happy with the way things are, and it sounds like there's some buyers that aren't very happy, that they may have made a poor decision, and they're running to the government to try to rescue them and make everything all up. Well, in a free society, since when is the government supposed to protect them from their bad decisions? If it's a contractor problem, then maybe we're over-regulated or over-licensed in this state, so maybe they should go the other way. I think it's very important that people learn from their bad mistakes, and a long time ago when you bought high and you had to sell low, well, then you had to eat that cost. That was your fault. Now it seems like that people are running to the government to save them, and if you don't get an inspection on your home and you purchase it, that burden is on you. You made a bad decision, and you're just going to have to live with it and move on. I just see this as the government needing to stay out. And that's all I have. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Pamela. Next, we've got Jess Hall in Palmer. Jess, are you there? Jess, could you please identify yourself and who you're affiliated with and begin your testimony, please?
Yeah, I'm Jess Hall. I'm a home builder here in Palmer. I just wanted to make a couple comments on the bill. I do support the bill. I support it in its original form, and I believe that's the way we should probably continue with it. I'm not sure I understand the exemption of having it only for organized boroughs. I think it needs to be a statewide application. The bill as it's written doesn't change the issue between being a licensed contractor and being an owner-builder. It just tries to define what an owner-builder is, which most of us interpret as someone who would like to build their own house for themselves to live in, and that's always been the definition as I've understood it in the 35 years I've been here. So anyway, I would like to support really the original bill that was submitted. Thank you.
Thank you, Jess. Next, we've got Patrick Dalton in Delta. Are you online?
Yes, sir, I am, and thank you for allowing me to speak once again.
Okay.
I may repeat to some of those that have already heard what I had to say last time, if you remember. But anyway, what I'd like to point out today is that contractors are licensed under the state of Alaska to practice a privilege that they would not normally have, and that's their professional, the profession, which is licensed by the state of Alaska. Now, I'm not up to that. However, on the other hand, the homeowner Is a citizen a free man who is not licensed under any license? He has private property. And this bill is not really concerned about the contractor, as I see it. This bill is really a bill that is focused on the homeowner's private property. And I'm really concerned that what we're doing here is taking away someone's private property. Because basically, if you tell a person they cannot sell their property, you've tied them up and they no longer have free use of their property because they cannot sell it. And for whatever reason that might be. And I do appreciate the fact that this may not be tailored to the unorganized borough any longer, which I believe, in my personal point of view, that's good for me. There's a lot of people in the organized borough areas. The Massu is a very vast borough with many remote places and that were built by homeowners, and that to this day, these people are still living out the Alaskan dream, building their houses. And for the state to apply this broad bill to everyone, I think, is the wrong approach, is what I'm saying. And I'm for quality building and building codes, and I'd like to just leave you with the question of why is it that building codes themselves implemented at the borough level where citizens can get involved in their borough assembly and voice how they want these codes to be drafted and so forth. Why is it that would not be a better way of addressing the problem? So, in other words, Anchorage has very adequate building codes, and it's so tight you cannot build a house in Anchorage without approval and going through a permit process, because I've been there, I know. And if a particular borough that doesn't have intense codes like that and comprehensive building codes and permitting process, if a borough doesn't have them and they're having a problem, they have that option. So like the Massu borough could, in fact, adopt building codes and enforcement and so forth if their citizens saw to it, you know, to their assembly were to draft these things. So it would bring the process of the legislative process closer to the electorate, you know, closer to the people on the borough level, and each borough could draft their own type of building codes to their own style and choosing. And so it seems like the top-down approach of the state mandating this on all areas, except, say, the unorganized, is still kind of a top-down approach, whereas it would be better if local boroughs would draft building codes. And see, then the building codes and ordinances, even the homeowner builder is subject to them. So it would accomplish a higher quality of building across the board, because even the homeowners would have to step through the hoops of the building permitting process. Okay. And so what I'm asking you is, why would it not be better to approach the problem through each borough drafting its own and adopting its own building codes and enforcement?
Okay. Okay, Patrick. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Are there any questions or comments from members of the committee? We do have Ed Sniffen up in Anchorage online with the Department of Law, and Sarah Chambers is here as well. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think the last, well, there are some good points brought up during the public testimony. Local building codes are adopted locally in the municipality, whatever that municipality may be. This is kind of a separate issue, but could you clarify, if you can have your staff clarify, please, clearly that unorganized boroughs are no longer included in this exemption? I'm not sure that was clarified to folks that are testifying. I think it's important.
Sure. Senator Machicki, through the chair. The limitation to selling one home every 2 years, unless you receive or can demonstrate to the Department of Labor, that only applies within organized boroughs, essentially a home rule first class or second class borough or unified municipality. So the changes, basically the additions that are being made to Exemption 12 only apply to those in those specific areas. Those in the unorganized borough are held to existing statute. Nothing changes for them.
And this is more or less, if I may.
Senator Chitty.
So state licensing and bonding and such is a state responsibility. Is that correct? That's why we're dealing with it here, as opposed to building codes, which are adopted by the municipality?
The Department of Labor does set forth bonding requirements and licensing requirements. Al Nagel is available on online. He is from the Department of Labor. He may be able to speak to that or add something to that if you'd like.
Would you like to direct a question to Mr. Nagel?
No, I'm just clarifying. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any additional questions or comments from members of the board? Is anyone else online that wishes to testify? Anyone else in the audience that would like to testify in this bill? Please come forward. Ms. Chambers, identify yourself for the record and who you're associated with, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Sarah Chambers. I'm the director of the Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing, and I did sign up for questions only, but just wanted to clarify for the record that the Department of Commerce is the licensing and bonding department, and just want to make sure that everyone was aware that that's the appropriate agency to direct those questions to.
Okay. Questions? Senator Machicki.
Still, just to clarify for the record, which is where I was going, still a state agency, I believe. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, licensing and bonding is set statewide by the legislature, and then we implement that through regulations.
Thank you.
Okay. Questions? Comments? Okay. So we got the CS together short time ago, basically.
Mr. Chairman, yes, the CS was delivered to members a few hours ago. It is online on the BASIS system. Members were informed, their staff were informed of the changes. They just weren't able to see it in print version as you read it currently on version O.
Gotcha. Comments? Okay. Is there a motion?
There is a motion, Mr. Chairman, being the fact that I feel that you're very responsive to some statewide constituents in that change. I move Senate Bill 193, version N, with the attached. Oh, I'm sorry. If I can back up. Wrong number. Mr. Chairman, I move CS for Senate Bill 189, version O. And individual recommendations to the next committee of referral.
With the attached fiscal notes.
And the attached fiscal note.
Okay, seeing no objection, we'll move this to the next committee of referral, that committee being, I believe it's finance. Brief at ease. Move for SB 193, sponsored by Senator Machicki. This is a second hearing on the bill. Presenting the bill would be Mindy Rowland, staff to Senator Machicki. Could you please identify yourself for the record and then begin your presentation, Ms. Rowland?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mindy Rowland, staff to Senator Machicki. We appreciate you hearing this bill again. Just to update you, SB 193 increases the bonding for contractors in the state. The bondings were set in the early 80s. They haven't been adjusted for inflation since then. So right now, a $10,000 bond rate for general contractors will be increased to $25,000 with a new residential-only endorsement to $20,000. I may have just misspoke. General contractors will be $25,000. Residential-only will be $20,000. Currently, specialty contractors, that would be a contractor that maybe just does drywall or just does plumbing or something, will increase from $5,000 to $10,000. And then to avoid hardship for those smaller contracting operations, we're creating a new, we'll call it a handyman category, for those performing smaller projects, and that bond amount will be $5,000, which is the current specialty bonding amount. As you know, the bonds are a consumer protection device. If for some reason there's default or problems with the construction project, then the homeowner or the customer has some recourse to get some sort of remedy for mistakes $10,000 doesn't go a long way in today's economy. Department of Law has struggled wanting to have the amount increased, give them a little bit more help for consumers. It also helps businesses as well. If I owned a leasing company and I lent somebody equipment and they didn't pay, I might be able to go back on their bond to get some recourse. We want to clarify that the handyman provision does not apply to those non-professional workers. Like if I wanted to hire my brother-in-law to build me a new deck and pay him for it, it's not his job. He's usually a fisherman and he's doing it between openings. He would not be subject to the bonding requirements. If he decides to go into business building decks, then he will become subject to that. We've heard no opposition to this bill. Several letters of support in your packet, and Ed Sniffen, Assistant Attorney General, is online, as is John McKinnon from the Alaska Association of General Contractors. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Rowland? Seeing none, once again, we have Mr. Nagel online, Mr. Sniffen, and Ms. Chambers is here in the audience. Are there any questions for those people from members of the committee? So, okay, online we have John McKinnon. John, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Could you please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony?
For the record, I'm John McKinnon. I'm the Executive Director of the Associate General Contractors of Alaska, a Construction Trade Association. I'll be very brief with my testimony. We've been working on this this issue for a few years, and we're waiting until we could get consensus among a variety of players, including the State Home Builders Associations, the Mechanical Contractors Association, the Electrical Contractors Association, and any other construction-related trade association. This is probably most importantly a consumer protection bill, and to just simplify how I look at this thing, you know, when a contractor is working on a building or a house and doesn't perform, doesn't complete the work, quite often the only recourse is to lien the property. If you're a vendor and you've sold materials into it, you can lien the property, but that brings in the innocent property owner involved in it. The simplest way that vendors prefer is to be able to attach the bond. Attaching the bond of the contractor is a quicker, easier way to go, and doesn't involve a property owner who may not have any direct involvement in failure to perform or failure to pay the bills. You know, this essentially adjusts the rates, which were put together in 1982, adjust them for inflation. And again, we got consensus and worked hard among many of the trade associations to get agreement on the levels that we brought forward. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for Mr. McKinnon? Seeing none. Is there anyone else online? We're going to open this up for public testimony. I apologize. Is there anyone else online? Anyone else in the audience? We're going to close public testimony. Questions or comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, is there a motion to move this bill?
Questions or comments from members of the committee?
Excuse me?
Oh,
okay.
Questions from members of the committee?
Excuse me?
We're haunted.
Okay.
Is there a motion to move the bill?
There is a motion, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 193, Version N, with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations to the next committee referral.
Any objections? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Brief at ease. Back in session. Now we turn to HB 241. It's a bill sponsored by Representative Reinbold. This is the first hearing on the bill. Presenting the bill would be Representative Reinbold. If she can come forward with her staff, please, and if you folks can identify yourself for the record, Representative, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Laura Reinbold. I represent Eagle River.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Reinbold.
Thank you. Can you begin your testimony, please, and introduce the bill?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. First of all, Mr. Chairman, thank you for hearing these bills. I do consider it a privilege to sit before your committee today, especially at this extremely busy time in session. So thank you, members of the committee and Mr. Chairman, for allowing us to present these pieces of legislation. First of all, I'm going to speak to House Bill 241 since it's first on the list. And people say not to marry your piece of legislation, but with this one, I think it was appropriate too. It extends the termination date of the Board of Marital and Family Therapy until June 30th, 2018. Each year, as you well know, the Division of Legislative Audit, who happens to be in the room, reviews the state boards and commissions to determine if they should be reestablished per AS 24.44. The Division of Legislative Audit reviewed the activities of this board and concluded that this board termination should be 4 years until 2018. The reason for this four-year extension is a result of the board not fully addressing two audit recommendations in the previous sunset audit. One, they were to develop a strategy to address the need for distance therapy and distance supervision. For the board of the Office of Governor, also to fill a vacant position seats in timely manner. After working with the Department of Law, the board determined that any changes to the distant therapy and distant supervision must be made through a statutory change. The board is working on drafting legislation and should have something by next legislative session to address this issue. The governor's office has also appointed members to the vacant seats. The Division of Legislative Audit makes a new recommendation from the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing to continue their efforts to improve the investigative case management system's integrity and confidentiality. This board is operating in the best interest of the public to protect and promote public health, welfare, and the safety of Alaskans, and I do urge a yes vote on this piece of legislation. I'm here for questions.
Thank you. Any questions for members of the committee? This is an extension. See no questions from members of the committee. Can Ms. Curtis come up, please, and identify yourself for the record and begin any testimony that you may have regarding this bill?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I represent the Division of Legislative Audit. Our agency did conduct an audit of the Board of Marital and Family Therapy. Report is dated June of 2013. Main objective was to determine whether they are operating in the public's interest and should be extended. The audit did conclude that the board is serving in the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating marital and family therapists. We recommended a four-year extension, which is half of the 8 years provided for in statute, and that is mainly due to their board not fully addressing the prior recommendation to pursue regulatory changes that are necessary to protect the public's interest. Although the board had initiated one regulatory revision, it had not addressed the need for distance service, distance therapy, and distance supervision. Marital and family therapy services are not widely available in many areas of the state. Distance therapy and distance supervision are widely viewed as solutions to this need for services. During the audit period, the board extensively researched and discussed the topic. However, it made little progress in developing regulations or moving the topic out of the discussion phase. So we recommend that the board develop a strategy to address the need for services. Audit also includes two additional recommendations, one to the Office of the Governor and the board to work together to fill board member seats, and another to the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing Director to continue efforts to improve the case management system's integrity and confidentiality. And we make this recommendation to the division concerning their case management system. We make it in all of our occupational board sunset audits for 2013. Their case management system was purchased with the expectation that it would be an off-the-shelf product with immediate functionality. This has not been the case. The division has pursued improvements, and this recommendation is to continue those improvements.
Questions for members of the board?
I have a question.
Senator Chickie.
So I'm noticing a trend here. First of all, I support the bill and the extension for the sponsor's sake, but the trend I'm noticing are I'm kind of a clean audit sort of guy. Getting a lot of repeats. Who is it that reconciles findings with completions?
Senator, through the chair, there is actually no statutory requirement, the legislative audit, follow up any type of recommendation you have in an audit, except as part of the statewide single audit, which is a federal requirement. what we do is when we go into the agency the next time we perform a sunset, we update the status. Now, these recommendations could be 8 years old, so sometimes they're no longer relevant. When it has to do with a systematic problem, in this case, the division's investigative case management system, we will pursue that the next year when we go into another occupational board sunset, and we do them almost every year. So for the systematic problems related to division support, we will continue to monitor those every year.
Great. Two more questions.
Senator Machicki.
Is there a way to query findings, or would one have to go through each audit?
Senator, through the chair, there is no way to query the status of a recommendation. If the question is, we do compile, and we have the last few years compiled the recommendations for the last 2 years by department, and we present those at finance committee meetings at the request of the chair. So, and we are hoping to actually put that information online so it's available to members of the legislature.
Okay, last one.
Senator Machicki.
Have you ever come to the realization that a board or commission was no longer serving a public purpose?
Through the chair, the division has recommended sunsetting entities. After an entity is in place for a great deal of time, typically the need for that entity has been established. And what our main goal when we go in is to look at whether the degree to which they're serving the public's interest and whether we can recommend improvements. But yes, our agency has recommended terminating agency.
Thank you.
Representative Reinbold, can you speak to the fiscal note?
Okay, for 241. I'm going to have my staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, again, my name is Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Reinbold. The fiscal note for the Board of Marital and Family Therapy shows for the governor's 15 request and on for the out years until the sunset date of 2018, an operating cost of $7,700. This is for travel and for board board meetings, travel per diem, those other costs. The fiscal note was revised in the other body to, in the analysis section, to show a summary of the board's true revenues and expenditures, since they were not included in the actual operating line expenditures.
Could you just, for the record, just go over that analysis on revenues and expenditures, just briefly?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For FY12, FY13, their biennium data, the board's revenues were $63,165, while their expenditures were $85,197. This left them with a biennium deficit of $22,030. Although their ending cumulative surplus for what they had from their carry forward balance was $112,195. So this board is operating with a current surplus.
Any questions for members of the committee?
I have a quick one.
Senator Machicki.
What happens to a board surplus, and why does it not get sort of zeroed out if it's self-funded through the legislative process or the budgeting process?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, I can take a stab at this, but I, from my past historical knowledge, but Sarah Chambers, Director of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, may be better suited to answer those questions.
Thank you.
Any questions for these individuals? Thank you. We'll have Ms. Chambers come up. Yeah. Ms. Chambers, could you state your name again for the record, and who you're with, please? And we have a question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm Director of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And through the Chair, Senator Michiki, to address the question that you just posed to the sponsor, boards and commissions within our Title VIII, are allowed to roll forward their surplus or their deficit. That money remains with that board. So those are licensing fees that would be paid into that board's accounting structure, and then at the end of that accounting period and into that fiscal year, once it's determined that there's a surplus or a deficit, then they carry that into the next fiscal year, so they may start out with sort of an advantage or a disadvantage, if you will. This is a byproduct of the approximation of licensing fees that's required in AS 0801065, because we are using the past knowledge to project the future. There's both art and science to it, and is unable to be zeroed out per statute.
Okay.
That's it?
Yes. Thank you.
Any other questions from members of the committee? We're going to open up public testimony. Is anyone online? Anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Questions from members? Is there a motion to move the bill?
Yes, I have a motion. Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 241, version A, with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations to the next committee referral.
Any objections? Seeing none, we'll move the bill. Take a brief piece. Back in session, we now turn to HB 239. It's a bill sponsored again by Representative Reinbold. This is the first hearing on the bill. Presenting the bill will be Representative Reinbold and her staff. Please identify yourselves for the record and begin your testimony.
Once again, Representative Reinbold from Eagle River. Should I proceed?
Yes.
Okay. Today we're presenting House Bill 239. And basically, this extends the Board of Examiners of Optometry till June 30th, 2020. And in order for time, so we don't say exactly the same thing, I'm going to ask Mr. Chairman, Chris Curtis is in the room. And the next, I was just going to go over three paragraphs of the Division of Audit, but we virtually said identical, the same thing. So in essence of time, you may want her to review. I'm happy to do it, but if you'd rather have her, it's your choice.
So in essence, it's an extension for this particular group, the Board of Marital and Family Therapy, and it's extended out to 218, correct?
Correct.
Sorry, did I say it's optometry? Okay, excuse me.
It's still 2022.
Yeah. Ms. Curtis, can you come up, please? And please identify yourself for the record, and if you have testimony, please proceed.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I represent the Division of Legislative Audit. Our agency did conduct a sunset review of this board. The main objective was to determine whether they were serving the public's interest and whether they should be terminated. Overall, we concluded that the board was serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating optometrists. We recommend the board's termination date be extended the maximum 8 years. We had one recommendation for improvement. However, that recommendation was not directed to the board itself, but rather to the director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. This is the recommendation to continue to efforts to improve the investigative management system, integrity, and confidentiality, as we previously discussed.
Questions for members of the committee? Okay, seeing none, we're going to open this up for public testimony. Is there anyone in the audience, or excuse me, online that wishes to testify? Anyone in the audience? We close public testimony. Questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, is there a motion to move this bill?
There is, Mr. Chairman. I move HB 239, version A, with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations to the next committee of referral.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to just kind of roll into the next bill here, which is 240. So the next bill is HB 240. It's a bill sponsored by Representative Reinbold. This is the first hearing on the bill. Presenting the bill, Representative Reinbold. Please identify yourself for the record again and begin your testimony on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Laura Reinbold, and I represent Eagle River. Today, we're here to bring House Bill 240, which extends the termination date to the Board of Chiropractor Examiners until June 30th, 2020. And as per AS 24.44, the Division of Legislative Audit reviews state boards and commissions to determine if they should be reestablished. I do have their conclusions, but as stated earlier, essence of time, make your choice who you'd like to present the audit.
Questions for Representative Reinbold from members of the committee? Seeing none, can Ms. Curtis come back up? Please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I represent the Division of Legislative Audit. Our agency did conduct an audit of the Board of the Chiropractic Examiners. Our main objective was to determine whether the board was serving the public's interest and whether its termination date should be extended. The audit concluded that the board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating chiropractors. We recommend the board's termination date be extended the maximum 8 years provided for in statute. Audit does make two recommendations for improving board operations. The first is to the Office of the Governor to ensure the statutory requirements for board members are met before appointment. Audit found that the public board member for this board was a licensed pharmacist, yet statutes prohibit public board members from having a direct financial interest in the healthcare industry. Second recommendation, again, was to the director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing to improve continue efforts to improve the case management system's integrity and confidentiality.
Can I ask you a question? The public board member was a pharmacist.
Yes.
And since they were related to the healthcare industry, that was an issue.
Yes.
And chiropractors, just for the record, they don't dispense medication. I'm not trying to trip you. I'm just saying. So maybe it was a technicality that they were part of the medical profession, and thus they couldn't be part of the.
Through the chair, I believe the prohibition from having a direct interest in the healthcare industry is to represent the consumer perspective on the board,
gotcha,
as opposed to the business perspective.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Curtis? Anyone online that wishes to testify on this issue? Anyone in the audience? We close public testimony. Is there a motion to move this bill?
There is, Mr. Chairman. I move House Bill 240, Version A, with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations to the next committee of referral.
Any objections? Seeing none, we're going to move this bill. Guess what? We're sliding in the HB 242, and it's also a bill sponsored by Representative Reinbold. This is the first hearing on the bill. Presenting the bill is Representative Reinbold. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dunleavy. And, Senate members of the Labor and Commerce Committee, once again, for my indulgence in allowing four bills on the same day. I do appreciate it. Today I'm here to present House Bill 242 to extend the termination date of the State Physical Therapy and Occupational Therapy Board till June 30th, 2022. As you know, the Division of Legislative Audit reviews state boards and commissions per AS 2444, and there is just a small audit with your indulgence.
Questions for Representative Reinbold for members of the committee? Seeing none, Ms. Curtis, can you come back up, please? Identify yourself for the record and give your presentation.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I represent the Division of Legislative Audit. Our agency did conduct an audit of the State Physical Therapy and Occupational Therapy Board. Report is dated June of 2013. Purpose was to determine whether the agency was operating in the public's interest and whether its termination date should be extended. Our audit concluded that the board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating physical therapists, physical therapy assistants, occupational therapists, and occupational therapy assistants. We recommend the board be extended the full 8-year maximum, and we did have one recommendation, and that was, again, to the director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing to continue efforts to improve their case management system's confidentiality and integrity.
Questions for Ms. Curtis from members of the board, or excuse me, committee.
Quick one.
Senator Machicki.
Ms. Curtis, what's the plan for the investigative case management system's integrity and confidentiality? Obviously, it's a common issue.
Senator, through the chair, the director is here and can speak to that directly. I did review their response as part of the audit. They do have they are working with their vendor to implement some improvements to the system. That's what I recall from their response.
Follow up to so
Senator.
Firewall issue, is that something like that for wait?
Senator, through the chair, the issues with their
with their new system that was implemented in 2010, there were some conversion problems. There were some reporting problems. There were some security problems. There is some issues with being able to view other folks' cases, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Investigators reported the system freezing up, losing information.
Okay.
Any other questions for Ms. Curtis? Is that a yes? Okay. With that, we're going to open this up for public testimony. Anyone online? Anyone in the audience? Anyone in the audience? Seeing none, is there a motion to move this bill?
There is, Mr. Chairman. I move HB 242 Version A with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations to the next committee of referral.
Any objections? Seeing none, we'll move the bill. Next bill is going to be HB 302.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. This is our last bill, right?
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to move to HB 302. This is a bill by Representative Thompson. This is going to be the first hearing on the bill. And presenting the bill would be Lynette Burt, staff to Senator Thompson. And if you could identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony, that would be great.
Good afternoon, Chairman Dunleavy and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, my name is Lynette Burge, and I'm staff for Representative Steve Thompson, sponsor of House Bill 302. House Bill 302 was drafted in response to the Alaska State Board of Public Accountancy's FY 2013 annual report recommendations. The CS for House Bill 302 addresses Alaska Statute 0804080, the Professional Rules of Conduct for the Profession of Public Accounting. This section of the statute sets the time that the Board of Public Accountancy must notice the adoption of any rule or amendment and its effective date to each holder of a license or permit. The House bill amends the number of days for noticing from 60 days to 30 days. This time frame is in line with the statute that the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing has for noticing a proposed action, and it's Alaska Statute 44.62.190. Basically, this is a housekeeping item to make sure that there's alignment between the notice for the profession in the two statutes. Available to answer any questions, Karen Tarver is here from the Board of Public Accountancy, and I believe also Jeff Johnson from Fairbanks is online.
Any questions for Ms. Burge? Well, this is a first hearing on the bill, and we will end up putting this off the side for future meeting. But we have invited testifiers, Karen Carver, Jeff Johnson. Are you both online?
Correct. Jeff is online in Fairbanks.
You want to come up? So, Jeff, you're online.
If there's any questions.
Okay. And we've got Karen here, if you want to identify yourself for the record.
Sure. For the record, my name is Karen Tarver, and I am the current chair of the State Board of Accountancy.
And you're here for questions?
Only if there's questions, yes.
Are there any questions for Ms. Tarver or Mr. Johnson?
Quick question.
Yes, Senator Machicki.
Why does this matter?
Through the chair, it's like Lynette said, it's just housekeeping. We recognize that there was a difference between our regulations and the department's, and we're just making them be in alignment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we have a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. Vicki?
I have no further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions from other members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
So this was brought forward by the board. The council did streamline and match up in other areas.
Through the chair, that's correct. During our annual report, We noticed this.
Additional questions or comments?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Seeing none, we're going to open this up for members of the public. Anyone else online to testify? Anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify? Seeing none, we'll close. testimony? Is there a motion to move this bill?
There is, Mr. Chairman. I move CS for House Bill Number 302, Version C, with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations to the next committee of referral.
Seeing no objection, we will move this bill to the next committee of referral, and at this point, we're adjourned. Thank you.